This episode is sponsored in part by Cribble Logstream. Cribble Logstream is an observability pipeline that lets you collect, reduce, transform, and route machine data from anywhere to anywhere. Simple, right? As a nice bonus, it helps you not only improve visibility into what the hell's going on, but also helps you save money almost by accident. Kind of like not putting a whole bunch of vowels and other letters that would be easier to spell into a company name. To learn more, visit cribble.io. That's cribble.io, and tell them Corey sent you and wait for the wince.
It looks like you're building a SaaS tool to manage AWS cost optimization. I don't think it'll work. Here's why I don't think it'll work. Not all of these may apply to you, but I'm certain some of them will. Customers won't put up with it. Look, if you're building something that's hard to use, more complex, or less fully featured than the AWS billing console itself, or require the customer to know as much as you do about the space, it won't work. It's a nuanced and difficult area, and crappy billing console to the contrary, incredibly hard to get right for all customer profiles. Customers care less about the big bill than they do about the fact that it can vary wildly from month to month. Their pain is in predicting it rather than lowering it. Customer employees, in some cases, embezzle more money in office supplies than they spend on the AWS bill. Payroll dwarfs the infrastructure bill almost everywhere. The problem is not that the numbers are big, it's that they're unpredictable. Restating earnings because of the cloud bill is a terrifying concept for CFOs, and it's very easy to mishear that as the bill's too high. AWS will not put up with it. AWS exhibits a cultural distaste for percentage of bill models, for even slight implications that the cloud is too expensive, and for me in general. That said, if you're building a product that integrates tightly with their bill, you absolutely need and want them on your side. We'll save you money by migrating workloads transparently to other cloud providers. We'll irritate them, apart and aside from the fact that this almost never works in the first place. Your tool can't tell the difference between idle EC2 instances and a hot DR site. To an API, this instance is idle because it's not doing anything, and this instance is idle because it'll have roughly 3 seconds of warning before it has to take production traffic, look identical. If you suggest turning off the DR site in order to save money, the customer will suggest you get the hell out of their office. Buying RIs for a cluster that's getting turned off in 2 weeks will get you hit with a belt by your customer. Reserve instance purchases and savings plan purchases are inherently scary. Buying reserved instances or savings plans for a cluster that's getting turned off in 2 weeks will get you hit with a belt by your customer. Reserved instance purchases are inherently scary. You're committing to use some level of resources in a given region for a fixed period of time. If your tool lacks situational awareness of temporary workloads and other business constraints, you're going to be asking AWS for a refund on the reserved instance purchase on behalf of the customer. Should they say no, you're eating that cost. Did I mention you want AWS on your side? The police will not put up with it. We'll make money by mining cryptocurrency with your idle cycles. Sounds great in your dorm room, but when a division of a financial institution rolls your offering out and their security team sees it, you'll be amazed by how quickly law enforcement, compliance, legal, and AWS all come down on you. Yes, I've seen several companies propose this, apparently with a straight face. I suppose it's a great thing to keep in my back pocket for those engagements where I want my buyer to go to federal prison at the end of it. Customers instinctively recoil at paying you a percentage of their bill. People begrudgingly have come to accept a variable cost every month with regard to their cloud spend. If you want to charge them a variable derived from that fluctuating cost, their finance folks will hate you. It works mathematically, but not psychologically. You also get to spend time in the weeds of, you want us to pay you a percentage of what we spend for support / CloudFront / 3 exabytes of data in Glacier Deep Archive that won't ever change again? Charging customers a percentage of savings means you need to be able to audit their books and bill them accurately, a process that is doomed from the start. It's tempting to charge a percentage of what you save the customer. This falls apart in a few ways. First, you're tied to customer implementation cycles that can stretch to years. Second, you're now saying that you need to be in a position to audit their cloud bills for a period of time that may well extend past your product's engagement. Third, the contract terms get incredibly complex. We turn that service off 3 months in, so you don't get to claim it anymore. Fourth, customers will be very angry at some of your findings. We absolutely will not pay you $8 million for telling us to buy that list of reserved instances. I don't care what we signed. You built a dashboard that requires 3 years of AWS operations experience to understand and display it to accountants. Turns out that accounting's collective understanding of the AWS bill trends less toward a nuanced understanding of cloud products and more towards Amazon as an online bookstore. And this is fine. You're not going to train accountants to understand engineering constructs in any reasonable period of time, particularly as a third-party vendor. You're displaying time value of money calculations to engineers. Accounting is a nuanced and complex field. If you're expecting a team of engineers to understand TVM, amortization tables, or whether treating a subset of the bill as CapEx makes sense, it absolutely does not, you are attempting to ice skate uphill. You're charging a fixed fee to customers that's too much for a tiny startup, yet makes you look like a joke to a Fortune 500 customer. If you charge my Twitter for Pets side project $5,000 a month to optimize my AWS bill, I will laugh you out of the room because that's more than the bill itself. If you attempt to charge a Fortune 100 company $5,000 a month to optimize their AWS bill, they will laugh you out of the room. That's a terrific indicator that you're not serious or that you're not cognizant of the scale of their operations. Your tool requires 3 full days of training to use effectively. This may astonish you, but people have full-time jobs that don't distill down to working with your product. It gets worse. Talk to any existing company in this space or someone on the AWS billing team, if you can find one with a tendency to overshare when they're drinking, and see just how many users at a customer site log in to look at the bill and how often they do it. You're asking customers to decide on 15 variables to buy reserved instances, then click a button to spend $4 million. Nobody is at all certain what the right RI purchase is to make, and the sheer number of variables that go into it mean the discussion becomes nuanced. If you abstract all that away, you're asking a customer to take your recommendation on blind faith and agree to spend enough money to launch 5 startups through your product. Oh, and you don't want to know what happens if you get any of the variables wrong.
This episode is sponsored in part by you, Gabyte. Distributed technologies like Kubernetes are great, citation very much needed, because they make it easier to have resilient, scalable systems. SQL databases haven't kept pace, though. Certainly not like NoSQL databases have, like Route 53, the world's greatest database. We're still, other than that, using legacy, monolithic databases that require ever-growing instances of compute. Sometimes we'll try and bolt them together to make them more resilient and scalable, but let's be honest, it never works out well. Consider Yugabyte DB. It's a distributed SQL database that solves basically all of this. It is 100% open source, and there's no asterisk next to the open on that one. And it's designed to be resilient and scalable out of the box, so you don't have to shard yourself to death. It's compatible with PostgreSQL, or PostgreSQL, as I insist on pronouncing it, so you can use it right away without having to learn a whole new language and refactor everything. And you can distribute it wherever your applications take you, from across availability zones to other regions or even other cloud providers, should one of those happen to exist. Go to yugabyte.com, that's Yugabyte.com, and try their free beta of Yugabyte Cloud, where they host and manage it for you. Or see what the open source project looks like. It's effortless distributed SQL for global apps. My thanks to you, Gabyte, for sponsoring this episode.
There are 15 companies like you, and you aren't differentiated. None of the existing tools are like us because we... Yeah, if you don't have a tremendous second half of that sentence that fits in a tweet, give up now. The space is crowded already, and people are tired of hearing about yet another tool that does the same thing everyone else talks about. That said, if your second half of the sentence is, have a marketing budget that rivals the GDP of a small to mid-sized country, I withdraw the criticism entirely and direct your attention to my sponsorship offerings. There's even a slight chance that the cost savings thing your tool does could take down services. Look, everyone cares about the bill right up until a cost-cutting measure takes the site down. That's the kind of narrative that gets people fired on the spot and companies sued. You do have business insurance, right? One feature release from AWS Billing and you don't have a business plan anymore. If the entire value proposition you have to offer is we have a gorgeous interface to the billing system, then first, you're right. The billing system is indeed terrible. That said, to fix the UI takes a feature team one day pushing it out, possibly without even a blog post, and then you're competing against something that's both native to the platform as well as free. You do you, but I'd not want to go to sleep at night with that sword of Damocles hanging over my head, however unlikely AWS getting better at user interfaces is. You're focusing on an esoteric part of the problem. So you built a system that schedules developer instances slash arbitrages the RI secondary market slash drives spot fleet adoption. Great, there are a lot of niche ways to save money, but when your solution gets rolled out and saves a customer $10,000 a month when they're bleeding more than that per day due to poor RI management, it's not sustainable. More directly, when someone is brought in to fix the problem systemically, hello, and highlights the thing that you missed, your customer will not be delighted. Machine learning doesn't mean what you think it does. We use AI slash ML to just stop, please. I'm not a VC. I'm not trying to raise a funding round. So let's call it what it is. Math. You can have all kinds of predictive analytics around customer behavior, but it won't catch someone spinning up a big cluster to do a single import job. It won't understand that a service is set to be deprecated, and it will fail to grasp context. Think about Siri, Alexa, Cortana, or any other robot person that lives in your phone. If you ask it to do something and gets it wrong, you feel foolish. You aren't going to go back and ask a second time. That feeling or outcome intensifies in the finance operations space. After a few recommendations that miss the mark, people don't trust your recommendations anymore and they stop caring what you have to say. Lambda bills don't matter. Look, every time I see a Lambda bill in the thousands, I see EC2 bills in the hundreds of thousands or millions. Lambda is fascinating, and there are a lot of opportunities to display cost information or optimize spend to chart the flow of capital through your organization, and a complete lack of customers who have this problem at any meaningful level of scale. I've tried some of these systems myself. They helpfully tell me that this month's Lambda bill is going to be 12 cents, and it's trending down 2 cents from last month. You want too much trust from your customers. So after the deal is signed, you expect customers to fork over a set of credentials that have view access into all of their data, their full cloud spend financials, the architecture of their next generation unannounced service, and be happy about it? Worse, you want them to install a CloudFormation stack they likely don't understand that spins up a bunch of Lambda functions, IAM roles and the like? Don't get me wrong, some customers will happily sign over the keys to the kingdom, but without very specific, very carefully bounded answers to questions from more operationally mature companies, you're likely to be laughed out of the room. You want too much work from your customers. Nobody has saved money on the bill or understand their cost attribution story as a top-level priority. The AWS bill is generally something that crops up as unplanned work. If you require your customers to apply tags globally, spend 3 days in training to learn your offering, or redeploy all their existing applications, then their adoption will remain low and they're unlikely to remain your customer for very long, provided their initial test gets off the ground in the first place. So, solve for all of those problems, build a SaaS tool that is compelling and customers care about, and please, then come talk to me. I should like to know about it.
This has been a Humble Pod production.
Stay humble.